Hello, my Workday Playdate peeps. Welcome back to another episode here on Workday Playdate. This month, we are talking all about networking, and we are redefining what connection looks like at work. And spoiler alert, it is not just LinkedIn requests and awkward Zoom chats. Today's episode, my peeps, is a heart hitter. It's called Anti-Maddering is a Thing, and leaders like you can help end it. Sounds intense. Good. It should, because today we're talking about something that can make or break workplace culture and your people's sense of purpose. And we've got the expert on purpose in the building, Dr. Zach Mercurio. So let me ask you this. Have you ever walked into work, looked around and thought, does anyone even see me here? That feeling, that's not just burnout or being overworked. That is something deeper. Something Dr. Zach Mercurio calls anti-mattering, toxic belief that you are invisible and insignificant. Yikes, right? So now here's why you should care. Zach Mercurio is a globally recognized researcher and speaker on purposeful leadership. He's the author of The Power of Mattering, How Leaders Can Create a Culture of Significance, and holds a PhD in organizational learning from Colorado State University. Zach helps leaders around the world build cultures where people feel seen, valued, and necessary, aka workplaces where people actually want to show up. So let's check in. Does any of this sound familiar? You're in a meeting, you share an idea, and it's crickets. That was my best cricket impersonation. A week later, somebody else says the same thing, and suddenly it's a brilliant idea. Or maybe you're working your butt off behind the scenes, but no one seems to notice. No thank you, no great job, not even a, hey, how's your life? You're not imagining things. Research shows that nearly 1 in 3 employees say that they rarely or never feel recognized at work. And employees who feel invisible are 2 times more likely to leave their job within a year. So if you're feeling unseen, or if you're a leader wondering how to stop the quiet quitting before it starts, this episode is your permission slip to get curious, get human, and take action. Let's get into today's playdate with Zach Mercurio. Okay. Zach, we're already doing it. We're here. Welcome to Workday Playdate. Are you ready to play, my friend?
I am. Thanks for the coffee. Cheers before we start it. That was great.
I know. You drank yours. I was impressed. I still have a lot to go.
It's gone. Mine is gone. I have a problem. I mean, my problem's name is espresso.
Oh, okay. Wait. How many cups? Let's just start off here. How many cups per day?
Okay, I do between 4 and 6 shots of espresso a day.
What?
Hold on. Before you do that, well, you already did that.
I did that.
So I was reading this whole article in the New York Times about the Italian culture around espresso. And that is the average Italian has between 4 and 6 shots of espresso. I'm Italian by like generations. My last name is Mercurio. But that made me feel better about myself.
Okay, wait.
Yes, I love espresso. Like, I love it. Like, 4 to 6. Yeah, I just had a couple shots. I'll have a couple shots of espresso for those who are joining after lunch. And, you know, maybe 1 in the afternoon.
Wow. Okay, listen, so many questions. Normally, I start off with setting an intention, but we're going right to caffeination station. Okay, wait. If I have caffeine post 4 p.m., I can't sleep. You can still sleep.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Okay.
Second question, is it just espresso or do you put milk in it or cream?
Just espresso, nothing else.
Wow. Okay.
I love it.
Your heart doesn't race like you're just like.
No, my heart's fine. Okay. I feel great. It's something, I don't know, it's just genetic. I do like a lot of endurance cycling. And so caffeine is a big deal in that world. So it's just normal. I feel great.
How long do you ride?
Like 60 to 100 miles, like I'm doing. I'm doing a cool gravel race this weekend, which I'm excited about. I live in Colorado. I know. What happens is everybody does something you don't expect to get into this stuff, but then someone does something that's like more amazing than what you're doing. You think you hiked 3 miles and you thought it was great. And then someone's like, I rode 400 miles. And so I'm creeping up. I just got lured into the culture.
So wait, 60 to 100 in a day or over the weekend?
Oh, no, in the morning, in a morning. Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah. It's like it's a gravel like bike race. And then there's other, there's people listening that are like, I know people like you.
I know people like you too. And they live in Colorado. They live in Colorado.
They do. Well, you have, and I'm not, this is nothing. This is like recreational. There's people who are.
What?
So yeah.
I'm so
it's good. It's good. It's good. No, you're not. Okay. Where are you again? We didn't even talk about this.
In South Carolina.
Yeah. Nice.
So we're more like, we're going to go on a walk. With a
walking,
cocktail.
Running. Yeah. I mean, it's just different.
It's so different.
But it is my thing. It's like it's sort of selfish because it's like 3 hours just out on the road by yourself.
But you
and I'm with people a lot. So
yeah, I feel that.
It's helpful.
I feel that. The peopling. Well, let's do this for our peeps because we call our community the peeps. Let's just like take a moment. Let's take a breath. Let's set an intention for our time this month on the show. We're talking about networking, but we're also going to talk about anti-mattering, which I just absolutely love. So what's a one-word intention that you want to give or receive today?
One word?
It could be a hyphenated word. But yeah, one word.
Okay. realization.
Oh, okay. Tell me why you chose that.
I think, you know, one of the things that's happened since we released this book around mattering is that I've been getting messages from people that are saying, this is naming something I felt, but I didn't have a name for it. You know, it's not like not feeling like I belong. It's not feeling included, but I just feel like I'm in a room with people, even friends, and nobody sees me. Nobody knows me. Nobody truly recognizes me anymore.
Yeah.
And we're experiencing that time and time again. And I think as we mentioned, when we were getting on, when you can name something, you can change it.
That's right.
And so it's helpful to be able to name it. So that realization of, this might be what I'm experiencing. This might be what I'm creating for somebody, can help us.
So good. So good. Okay. Well, let's just jump right to it. Let's talk about anti-mattering because I love this topic. When, you know, we were talking to your people who were talking to our people and we saw the word anti-mattering. I was like, wow, that hits. Like there's a realization. I don't know if you know this. I wrote a book called I See You, literally like I see you. And so this is such a through line for me because the book that I write is like, I want you to see yourself first. So then you can feel like you can be seen and be a person of service to others. But I love this topic of anti-mattering because it really, when you say it, it like carries weight. I feel something when you say it. So what is it? How does it show up at work, in life, all the things?
Let's take the anti out for a moment to understand its inverse, which is to matter to other people. And I think that what's important to recognize is that the need to matter, to be significant to another person is our most fundamental survival instinct. When you're born, when everybody who's listening right now was born, scientists find the first thing that you did was you had an instinct. It's called the grasp reflex. You actually throw your hands out as a baby into a hugging motion to grasp on to someone so they'll care for you enough to keep you alive. Nobody would be listening right now if at some point in your life you hadn't mattered enough to someone else so they'd keep you alive. That instinct to be important to someone else never goes away. And it turns into the fundamental need to be seen, heard, valued and needed by those around us. Now, you're right. You know, we can see ourselves. We can believe that we matter, but it takes other people to show us how we matter.
Okay, this is deep. This is deep because, like, I physically saw baby, like my son, reaching for me as you said this. Can we stop right there? Because
I have a question. So, initial survival instinct is to matter to somebody, and it never, never goes away.
Okay, so let's talk about this. So literally from birth, we are reaching.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if we aren't met with a reach back or we aren't extended love in the beginning?
Yes. So imagine the absolute panic of a newborn who reaches out and finds no one. I mean, I think you could turn this into what we're seeing right now with people feeling lonely, invisible, overlooked. I mean, a lot of people are facing that same stress of insignificance. What happens if we don't find that person? It results in what psychologists call insecure attachment through childhood and adolescence and even adulthood, where if you have attachment to somebody, if you feel that you matter to somebody, you can go out, take risks, experiment, be loud, as my children are learning, build relationships. And you can do those things because you have someone to come back to that you know you matter to no matter what. That's why when I go to like my friend's house, I love when their kids are loud in front of them.
Yeah.
Because they know that they're like experimenting, pushing the boundaries isn't going to threaten the belief that they matter to someone else. This is what psychological safety is in the workplace. It's knowing that someone has our back.
Yes. Yes. We say that on improv stages before we get on.
Absolutely.
We literally as improvisers, we're like, got your back. And we're patting each other's back.
Absolutely. You know, like true confidence doesn't come from just sitting by yourself and chanting, I am enough. You know, right. It comes from when someone has your back. When you can go out, try, fail, experiment, take risks, learn, and then you know that you matter to somebody enough. I think that in improv, this is a great example. The people on that stage with you, you already have a pact of mattering. You've already said, you matter to us, and whatever happens up there, you already matter to us, and so that's what's going to make us successful. That hits on that primal human instinct.
Can I tell you something about heard that? And value. Okay. So this is wild because I have actually experienced in my improv career, and I'm at this point, like the improviser who doesn't improvise, like I just teach it, you know, it's like the shoemaker who doesn't have good, whatever that whole phrase is.
But
I, in the very beginning of my improv career, had a group of people that I performed with who I did not feel psychologically safe with. I did not feel like they had my back. And I did
tell me. What that felt like and what it did to your performance.
Dude, crushed it. I mean, we sucked. We literally sucked. Like, I mean that I can honestly say we were bad because we didn't listen to each other. We didn't feel like if we took a risk, somebody would be on board with it in our scene. This is the very early stages of my improv career. And I remember my coach at the time, knowing I wanted to do this work and put it into context in a corporate form, saying to me, you could have quit. Like he was like, you could have just stopped. Like if I were you, I would have just stopped. Because there were a couple people who did not create safety. They wanted me to not matter. And I wanted to, but everybody else got along. But there were a couple people who I felt like egos were involved in. And it was not a great safe space. I did not feel comfortable taking risks on that stage. I didn't enjoy performing. I didn't feel like I had any trust when I carried a scene somewhere. So I left that group and then by juxtaposition had years of performing with other people where every other group felt so safe and like my improv chops were honed because I could be safe on that stage. And I knew like if I was slipping in that scene, somebody would pick me up, have my back and would carry it forward and would yes and my idea, right? Like it's so it ties into improv so much for me, just what you're saying.
Yes. So let's deconstruct this a little bit.
Yeah.
So think about that newborn who reaches out and finds no one. Think about that panic, that stress of insignificance. When we feel insignificant to those around us, when we don't feel seen, when we don't feel heard, when we don't feel valued, we react accordingly. And you exemplified it totally. There's two things that we do. We either withdraw. Leaving is a withdrawal symptom, a withdrawal behavior. When we feel insignificant, we leave. We leave relationships, we leave organizations, we leave teams, or we isolate. We withhold, we stay silent. Those are all acts of withdrawal. Or it can be a little bit louder, which are acts of desperation, gossip, complaining, blaming, protesting. Many of the most toxic or difficult employees, for example, that I work with or people ask me to work with are actually the most unseen, unheard, and undervalued. Martin Luther King Jr. once said that protest is the language of the unheard. I think that things like gossip, things like toxic behaviors are often the language of the unseen and the unheard. So when we don't feel seen, when we don't feel heard, when we don't feel valued, when we start to question ourselves. So when we don't have that person that has our back, it's always like, am I enough?
Yeah.
Can I do this? Do I belong here? And that questioning is a symptom of what we call anti-mattering, which is the opposite pole of mattering, the question that you ask me. And Gordon Flett, who's a psychologist, he's studied mattering for years. He termed anti-mattering this in to pay homage to a physicist that described antimatter in the universe, which is like matter has this positive charge, but antimatter has an equally powerful negative charge. The same is true in our lives. It is very hard for anything to matter to someone who doesn't believe that they matter.
Yeah.
It is very hard for people to care if they don't first feel cared for. But too often right now in our world of work, our world in general, we are unintentionally sometimes causing people to feel unseen, unheard, unvalued, unneeded.
Can we talk about that? I want to talk about that. We got a lot of people leaders. The peeps love their peeps. Okay. Peeps love their peeps on this show. How can they recognize if they are making somebody feel unseen? If anti-mattering is happening on their team? So you can use me as an example. So let's give me some thoughts. Like how could I recognize if somebody who is working on my team does not feel seen, heard, or valued? What are some of the signs?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we mentioned some. Yeah. Withdrawal.
Yeah.
So a person's not as energized as they used to be on a task they used to love. Someone who usually speaks up and gives you ideas is suddenly silent. There's gossip in your organization. People are talking behind each other's backs. There's a lot of people thinking things but not saying them, and you can sense that. Turnover. We've labeled it turnover to make it easier for us to digest, but it's really leaving. Somebody just choosing to exit and leave the organization. And really, it's a relationship because, work is a relationship. Someone has a relationship with the people in the organization, and that what's enabled them to do something for some bigger purpose. So anytime you see some of those things, they're very likely, those are signs that people feel insignificant. I want to also add that we've talked a lot about belonging and inclusion over the last 10 years. And we have programs and well-being programs and DEI initiatives and surveys. And you're probably told you should be an authentic leader, servant leader, transformational leader, ethical leader, spiritual leader. We've done all this stuff. It's a $1 billion industry telling people how to lead well, trying to improve employee engagement. Yet engagement is at its lowest rate that it's ever been. And when you look at the latest data on why, you'll see that just 39% of people say that someone at work cares for them as a person. That's the lowest that's ever been. Just 30% say that someone sees and invests in their unique potential. That's the lowest that's ever been. 8 out of 10 people say they experience loneliness in work. They feel isolated. Now, loneliness is not the outcome of being alone.
Right.
The research is very clear on this. Loneliness is not the lack of social contact. It's the lack of perceived social value to one another. Mm. So I think that for leaders right now, it's important to understand that this cannot be solved through a program, through an initiative. It can only be solved through everyday interactions. Making sure the next person we interact with feels seen, heard, valued, and needed. And that takes three things. It takes authenticity, consistency, and this last one is really important, and I think is one of the reasons why we're in this place that we're in, but it takes skill. Hard skills, rigorously developed skills.
When you talk about skill, because authenticity is, we can do that. Consistency, authenticity is like, okay, I'm going to show up, and I'm going to be my full self, right? I'm going to bring my full self, my human, because now I feel like in post-2020 world, we are bringing our full selves to work. We are truly having to show up. Work and life have blended so much that personal, more so than ever, I see in my own team and myself, it carries over, right? And there's this lack of, there's more of a blend than I feel like there ever was before. Consistency, we can do this continuously. But when you say skill, what do you mean by skill?
A skill is something that is, it's an ability that we can learn and implement. One of the reasons why I think that 30% of people say they feel quote unquote invisible at work per WorkHuman last year is that over the last 25 years, we've been able, and I'm holding up my phone, we've been able to use these to communicate with one another.
Yeah.
And what we don't realize is happening is that we are losing the skills to see, hear, and value one another. Because for example, if Aaron, if you gave me some good news on a project that we were working on, I can just send you like a thumbs up emoji and say, hey, great job. So that gets me out of the social situation to say, hey, Aaron, I've been noticing that you've been working really hard on that for the past couple of years, you know, and I really noticed your tenacity and your creativity. And I just want to say, I'm really proud of you. That takes skill. That's a skill. So the more we can just use a digital transaction to get out of the social interaction, we lose the skill. Same is true with when someone gives us bad news or bad news on a project. I can just give you like a thumbs down emoji. Sorry to hear that. We can be on a remote call and there's a, literally a button below that says leave.
Yeah.
So if you're frustrated in this meeting, I can just click leave and I don't have to think about you till next week. That's not normal human behavior. So instead, I don't have to say, hey, I noticed you were frustrated. What's going on there? And as we've been losing these skills, so the average adult sends 30 to 40 text-based messages to colleagues a day. We've increased from 12 million to 38 million people every day using Slack instead of real-time communication. More people than ever are on platforms, programs, you know, promising connection. We're more connected than ever, but we're lonelier than ever.
Yeah.
So why is that? I think it's a skills deficit. The skills are like the skill to see a person, the skill to show compassion, the skill to deeply hear a person, to go beyond what they're saying and dig into the feelings behind their words, the skill to actually show someone the difference they make for you and how they make it, the skill to remind someone how they're needed. These are all skills that we used to learn in social situations, but over the last 25 years, they've eroded. And we've been calling them soft for the last 50 years. And anytime our brain sees something as soft or simple, we are susceptible to an overconfidence bias and we think we're better at it than we are.
Let me say that for free. Okay. We at Improve It, we train on quote unquote soft skills, right? So this has been something that I've wanted to correct. Literally, I want to call Webster and be like, listen up, because soft skills really are skills. They are the hardest thing to train. I tell people all day long, when I'm interviewing somebody, come in with empathy and compassion. I will teach you how to learn to do this platform or software or skill or whatever it is. But show me a human that already has the skill of authenticity and compassion and empathy. I'll train them the real skill. That's what I'm trying to train. And that's what we use improv to do, is train on these things because you can feel them. Hey, peeps, if you are loving this episode, I'm so sorry to take a break, but I want you to take your networking skills even further and hear me out. Join us for our Improve It Networking Workshop. Now, in just 2 hours, whether it's on Zoom with up to 50 people or in person with up to 100 peeps, you'll learn how to be fully present in the moment so there's no room for self-consciousness or shaky nerves. You'll practice how to offer genuine support, find common ground with both internal and external customers, and discover that the best way to connect is to listen deeply and build on the other person's ideas. Each activity in our networking workshop ends with a quick debrief so you can take the lesson into your real world conversations. Our formula is so simple: being present plus offering support equals engaging conversations. So reach out to us at learntoimproveit.com. That's learntoimproveit.com to learn more. And let's make networking the fun, fulfilling experience it's meant to be. Now back to our show. I want to go back to what you said about we are more connected than ever, but we're lonelier than ever, because I really believe that. And I see that. And the 30 to 40 slacks per day, I think is like maybe like a small number. Like that should, that could.
Yeah, it's probably higher.
And the amount of messaging platforms we have. We have text. We have LinkedIn Messenger. We have email. We have Skype. We haven't used Skype in a long time. We have Slack.
That still exists.
I don't, you know what? I heard it on a podcast the other day and people were like laughing about it.
We should have done this podcast on Skype.
Yeah, it was actually, I love Amy Poehler's new show. This is a plug and she did not pay me for it. It's called Good Hang and it's so good. And her and Andy Samberg were talking about how they had their first interview with SNL. It was on Skype. Were like, oh my God. We'll be like, back in my day when we used Skype, you know. And meanwhile, our kids will be like teleported to the next room. Anyway, all of that to say, there's just so many messaging platforms and there's so many ways to communicate. But what I feel like you're saying to make people feel seen, heard, and valued is like, get in rooms, get on Zooms, see faces.
Yes. And it doesn't just have to be, it's remote's fine. Like if you're working remotely, but the problem is not, technology doesn't change who we are. It exposes who we are.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is how we use it. And when we're remote, we tend to interact with each other for shorter periods of time.
Yeah.
We tend to use technology for efficiency and not connection.
Yeah.
We don't go offline. So like if there was something in our conversation that sparked my interest and I wanted to know more of, normally, in the remote world, I can say, I can just wait till our next one-on-one. Whereas if we were walking out of a conference room, I would want to engage with you. Right. So what leaders have to do is they have to pick up the phone and then say, hey, Aaron, what you said in that meeting was really interesting to me. Let's talk about it. Mm. And it's those little in-between moments of connection, of real connection that actually start to rebuild this ecosystem of mattering, of people actually feeling seen and heard and valued, and not just a transaction, not just another meeting that people have to get through.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that's happened is we've treated all of our interactions as transactions.
Yeah.
Here's what I want from you. Here's what I need to get from you. And let's move on. You know, kids are really great at showing people how they matter. My 7-year-old, I just remember this moment. There was the trash truck was coming over, you know, in front of my house.
Love a trash truck. Right.
But there was this guy and he looked like sort of like he was slamming the thing that the thing shot and it was throwing the trash in the thing. He looked pretty like angry about his day. I mean, I could tell. And my 7-year-old just sat out there and was like waving with really, really big smile. And he didn't even say anything, but this is an interaction where someone feels seen. And this guy gets off the truck and he just lit up. His whole demeanor shifted, right? And I feel like when we go through our work and we go through our days, we have a lot of social ignorance. We just brush by people. We think of everybody as getting in the way, or we take for granted that they're there. But what I think kids do really well is they're like, wow, like you're here.
Yes.
Like they're doing this. This is amazing, right? And I think that that leaders that I've observed that help people truly feel seen, they almost talk to someone as if they're meeting them for the first time.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and they take that interest in somebody. They write down things they want to remember about them. They call them and say, I was thinking about this conversation last week. And I think so that you can do this without even saying anything. I mean, just roll down your window the next time you're at one of those one-lane roads and you're annoyed because there's a stop sign holder and just say, hey, I know the life's really hard. I know this is a hard job, but I just want to thank you for being here and just watch what happens.
Yeah. The
people will be like startled to be seen.
Right. Oh,
so
Zach,
these small interactions, and then you let's bring it into the work. These small micro interactions are what create mattering, not big actions. We've asked this thousands of people this question. When you feel that you matter to a leader, what are they doing? I have never heard someone say, when I got more money, when I got a promotion, when I won employee of the month.
Right.
They always say, my leader took the time, remembered something about me and checked in, was compassionate to me, listened to me, told me that they believed in me, gave me responsibility, challenged me. And almost always it wasn't big actions, it was small interactions. And we've come to call these moments of mattering, like the trash truck moment.
Yes. Oh my God. Okay. First of all, like that just brings me so much joy. My son used to love trash trucks. Like, he's over them now, but like watching your son just smile at the trash truck and knowing that that guy felt so seen and heard and loved. I got to tell you this.
What happens to us? I mean, we should be like, this person enables our life to happen.
Yes, exactly.
You know, work is an act of community. It enables everything else to happen. We should be like, hey, I am really glad you're here right now, checking me out at the grocery store. Like, this is important. You're important. We should relentlessly be doing this for each other.
You know, it's so funny you say that. I'm an author, as are you, but I also have a coach who is an author, and she just released a new book, and I happen to have a copy of her book. It's called Intentionally Ambition. Her name is Ra Goddess. Love her so much. So anyway, I just come back from this retreat, and I have extra copies of her book, but I got a free copy of her book, and I was in the airport, and I said, you know what? It's Intentional Ambition. I'm going to give this to somebody I see who is making a difference. Like, maybe they're, you know, at a checkout cashier or something, but just somebody I feel like who needs some light shine on them today. And I was in the Chick-fil-A line because I really wanted these waffle fries. Okay. And I was like, give me that with some Polynesian. And I know Chick-fil-A.
I go with the Chick-fil-A sauce.
Me too. I do it Polynesian and a Chick-fil-A, maybe a side of ranch. Throw it in, you know, get crazy.
And it's really like a full dip.
Get it in there. And I get a large fry. And I'm not going to lie. I love those fries. Bring me joy. So I'm in there and I see this cashier who's obviously, you know, they're trained in my pleasure, and there's so many things that Chick-fil-A does right. There's things that they could do better. But I also will say that the person behind the counter in Charlotte Airport, Mercedes, okay, this was Mercedes, was so kind to me. I could just see Mercedes' eyes that they were looking for something to make their day better. I just, you know, when you get the gut feeling like this person needs some joy. And I handed Mercedes the book, and I'll never forget the look on Mercedes' face. It was like almost like you, what? And then Mercedes took a step back, went to the back, and like I saw them put the book in their bag, take a minute, and just was kind of like, and then I was waiting for my food, and I watched Mercedes come back to the counter, and the whole demeanor, her body language, like everything about them changed in that moment. And I shared this story with my coach, and she was obviously thrilled. I was like, why don't I do this with my own book called I See You? Duh. But I really felt in that moment that Mercedes needed that. And that when I was able to witness that human being change in an instant just by a human being being kind, because I'm sure there was like this long line, everybody was waiting for their food, they're angry, they're in the middle of their layover, whatever. That was a turning point in their day. And I'm not saying I did it to feel that for myself. It was more like this book has intention behind it. Somebody needs some intention in their life. But watching that in real time was rewarding selfishly. Selfishly, I was like, hell yes. I made somebody's day and it feels good. And so as leaders, why don't we do that more? Why am I not doing this with my own team every day, consistently?
Yeah, that for you though, and I love this, that took intention. Oftentimes these practices are common sense, and that's a big problem because common sense is usually not common practice. The way we've developed ourselves as leaders and developed others as leaders over the past 50 years has been to rely on intuition. Just be a good person, you know, make sure people feel heard, engage your people, inspire your people. But intuition doesn't scale, right? Intention, practices, habits, skills scale. And we just haven't approached it with as much intention and rigor as we have other things. For example, if I'm in an organization, almost every organization that I've worked with, if they had a budget meeting and they had a meeting on how to give positive feedback, and they overlapped and they needed more time in their schedule, they'd always cancel the meeting on how to give positive feedback.
Right.
It's always the people aspect that comes after the operations. And what's ironic is that it's people's energy that enables every operation and every metric, right?
Ain't that the truth?
But we just don't approach it with as much rigor. But what I want to go back to that reaction of Mercedes. That reaction is reaching out and finding somebody. this person in front of me sees me enough to take the time and thought to give me this book, that calm, right? There was a researcher at the University of Tennessee who studied thousands of people for 6 months, and he actually measured their cortisol levels and levels of fight or flight hormones. But then he also measured how much they felt they mattered to other people in their lives. And those who had more relationships in their life where they felt seen, where they felt like people made gestures to help them feel heard, to show them that they made a difference, they had objectively lower cortisol levels in their blood, objectively lower stress. So, you know, and I remember my first son when he was born and he was screaming and crying in the bassinet and I reached down. I remember him grabbing my finger and I remember him calming down instantly. But that's what happens when we show someone how they matter. I mean, the art, and we can architect these moments, like, and I think you're seeing this through your example, but there are three really key elements that make a moment of mattering. One of these three things is always present in our research. One, people have to feel noticed, seen and heard. So you noticed Mercedes. The second is people need to feel affirmed. They need to know that they and their uniqueness are making a unique difference. And the third is that people should feel needed. And just knowing that, like, am I making the next person I interact with feel noticed, affirmed, and needed? When we can name something, we can invest in it. But that's what you created for her, is a small micro moment of mattering. And guess what? She's going to go home. She is someone's sister, friend, daughter, mother, who's going home, and someone's going to ask, how was work today? And instead of saying, oh, it's all right, she's going to say, hey, someone gave me this book. Like, just stop. Can you believe that? I guarantee she's still talking about that.
Yeah. It was, I mean, and I think about just those small acts of kindness, right? Like, when I remember somebody did that for me, I left my wallet. I was at a Starbucks and I had happened to left my wallet in the car and the guy behind me was like, I got you. And you just pay for my whole thing. Mm. When actually he didn't tell me that. I went to the car to get my wallet. When I came back, he had already paid for it. And they said, no, he paid for you. Like, those small things. And I don't even know this person, but they made my whole day. I was like, wow, what good karma. What a good thing makes me want to do that, right? And so—
And interestingly enough, that's what good leaders do in work. We like to think about these things in life, like, oh, that's amazing. But in work, it's small things, right? It's like if someone was struggling with a piece of equipment, if you're in manufacturing, it's the next week saying, hey, I noticed you were struggling with that. I just sent a ticket in to get that fixed. You tell me when it's fixed.
Yeah.
Right. I want to follow up with you. It's these like little moments where we're remembered, where somebody takes action to alleviate a struggle they see, where somebody goes above and beyond to thank us and show us how we're needed, that actually makes leaders who are not only worth following, but are leaders who are remembered.
Yeah. Oh, man. So good, Zach. You're so good. I love this conversation. I love this concept of anti-mattering. Is there anything that we did not talk about when it comes to anti-mattering that you want the peeps to know?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'll leave you with this question that I think you can ask anybody in any relationship that is incredibly powerful. And the question is, you should ask people, when you feel that you matter to me, what am I doing? That is, you will get better data than you could ever get in an engagement survey, climate survey, culture survey. Because again, you know, I think that all human behavior is either a result of met or unmet human needs.
Yeah.
And that ultimate primal human need is to matter. And so when you ask that question, when you feel that you matter to me, what am I doing? And you actually listen, you write down what they say, and you do more of those things, it can be powerful. I was getting interviewed for a magazine by a journalist, and I proposed this question to her, and I didn't know it, but apparently she was pretty affected by it. She had a preteen girl who she was having trouble connecting with, and she just asked her daughter that, her 13-year-old daughter, when you feel that you matter to me, what am I doing? And she said that she never thought about this, but her daughter said, you know, mom, it's just when you drive me to school and we're listening to my favorite music and we're just sitting next to each other.
Hold on. I am taking a moment. That I'm so, honestly but, crying. Like that.
Yes, I know. It's, uh-huh. But why is that emotional? Well, it's emotional because if she hadn't asked the question, she would have never known that that routine in her day of just like playing her favorite music, just sitting in silence,
yeah,
was the moment that her daughter most felt like she mattered to her.
Dude. Okay. Well, I have to go now. This show is over. That is so good. It's so good. And it's, I'm going to ask my son and I want everybody, I'm going to ask my team. I think it's a brilliant question.
Yeah.
And I think it's a brilliant.
Yeah.
Because it, every answer is different, but like that is so powerful. Just feeling the presence of your family around you is something that I won't take for granted. And, I got to tell you, Zach, this work is so powerful. You are doing good, good, good work in this world, my friend. I got to tell you. So please keep going. I ask everybody this question. This is the last question. So now I'm not going to cry anymore. We're not crying anymore. Okay. I'm going to get some tissues and here it comes. Zach tissues. what? How are you going to make your workday more playful today?
Oh my goodness. Playful.
Yeah. What you going to do? I know you got some, you're getting shit. She's done. What are you going to do?
I am. What am I going to do to make it more playful? Oh my gosh. Well, I have a pet snake.
What?
Well, it's not mine. It's my 7-year-old's. Okay. The snake's name is Striker. Okay. And so my work is playful. I tend to like look over and sometimes he just pokes out and just stares at me.
Oh my God.
And the fact that this reptile is looking at me
is
pretty fun. So I might take him out today and just have him hang out with me as I work.
I hope Striker doesn't strike. Okay.
Well, okay. So my 7-year-old picked him. So there's two options, right? He saved his money for this. Trust me. I did not have.
Okay.
I was trying to teach responsibility.
Yep.
He saved his money for this. And he had two options. He had a docile python, ball python he could pick. It was very, the guy was like, this was so calm and great. I was like, that one sound looks great. Or the one that struck at the glass to bite the people who got him. And of course, my son says, we need to get that one. And I'm going to name it Striker.
Okay.
Striker has never tried to bite us. He's like super nice and is attached to us now.
He knows you're your family. He's a part
of the maybe pack. I'll do that. Maybe I'll take him out today. Maybe I'll go outside. I like working outside.
Me too. Okay, Zach, I feel that. Well, listen, everybody on the show is going to want to find you. They're going to
Cook. After a 6-shot a day espresso drinking snake owner. I don't know if this is going to get me many new fans, but
no. The in between was good. The beginnings and the end, we got questions. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. No, you're awesome. Where can they find you?
You can go to zachmercurio.com. Pretty simple.
Yes. And all the things are there.
Yeah. All the things.
Yep. Okay. Zach, you are awesome. I feel like we got a lot of things. I feel your word was, hold on, it started with an R. What was the word that you said?
Realization.
I want to see reaction. Realization. I realized a lot today. And I feel like walking away from this, the peeps are going to have, if not some really cool stories, but some really awesome realizations that they can have with themselves. And I love this question. I love this homework assignment. Can you repeat it one more time for us?
Yeah, ask somebody. When you feel that you matter to me, what am I doing?
That's it.
And do more of those things.
Do those things. The world needs more of you, Zach. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Striker,
for
giving us Zach.
Yes.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. Zach, thank you for reminding us that seeing people is a leadership skill, not a nice to have. And okay, my peeps, here is your networking homework for this week. Not only are we going to do Zach's homework, I'm giving you your own homework. Number one, I want you to think of one person at work who may be feeling invisible. And number two, send them a text, a Slack, or I don't know, tell them face to face. Hey, I see how hard you're working. It matters. You matter. And bonus points if you ask them about something non-work related too. And if you're the one who needs to hear that, let this episode be your reminder. You are not invisible. Your effort counts. And the ripple you're making is bigger than you know. So my peeps, until next time, keep showing up with purpose, with empathy, and with radical visibility. I will catch you next week on Workday Playdate, where we see you every time. Bye.